Welcome to the Once Upon a Leader in Africa podcast with George Nudu. We invite you to listen to influencers and opinion shapers narrating their experiences from their leadership roles in Africa, from the world of business, community development, government, corporate, social enterprise, among others. We will glean from their good, bad, and ugly side of their leadership journey and be inspired to overcome adversity, to pursue success against all odds, to be a great leader, and many other lessons. Welcome to the podcast, and here's George Nudu.
Hi, Lucy, how are you?
I'm very well, George, and thank you for having me. I'm happy to share my leadership journey with you.
Thank you for agreeing to do that, and great to see the way you have, you know, just gone up your leadership journey. So today I'm excited just to hear how it has been. Even before we get into that, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
I am an agriculturalist by profession. That is what I studied in university. And then later on, I studied something they call development studies, which is, I think, a blend of economics and the subject matter, which I know so well. So I would call myself an agricultural development specialist. And, you know, after college, of course, you get your first job, which probably doesn't pay very much. But I think I was able to demonstrate that I'm a self-starter, I'm somebody who can work hard, and that has, you know, helped me to grow in the leadership journey. My other roles include I'm a wife and a mother, and I am proud of those other, you know, careers.
Okay, and what's your current leadership role?
Yes, I'm a regional director in one of the leading foundations in Kenya. It's called the Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture in East Africa, which is a corporate foundation of one of the leading agribusinesses in the world. So I am responsible for the East African region, which encompasses a few countries around Kenya. We operate from Kenya and reach, I think, four or five countries within the region. And we have an outlier in Southern Africa as well, which we manage from Nairobi.
What are your responsibilities, Lucy, as the regional head?
Mine is leadership to provide, you know, strategic direction. There is, of course, program management, donor relationships, because we raise resources from a number of donors to be able to implement our programs, as well financial management, that the resources are used in an accountable and transparent manner. People management, because I have a team that is ensure that we have the right talent in place. There's coaching, there's mentoring, and all matters that pertain to leading people. There's also stakeholder management. We don't exist in a bubble. There are other many stakeholders who are doing something similar to what we are doing. This government, various stakeholders. So we have, my responsibility is to keep a relationship with them, which is in the interest of the mission of the organization. So really, in a nutshell, that is what I do day to day.
And just tell us a bit more what your organization does.
Our organization, as I said, is a corporate foundation. So we are here for good. Our mission is to support smallholder farmers in developing countries. So besides being in Kenya or in Eastern Africa, we are also in West Africa and we are also in Asia. So our work is to look at what small-scale farmers do, find innovations that can help them. We catalyze and grow those innovations. And then those innovations end up being commercialized so that they can be available for use for the smallholder farming fraternity.
Okay, that's interesting. What have been some of your joys in working with these smallholder farmers?
when something works and they can testify and the joy and delight in their lives, and particularly when you put money in their pockets. I think that that has been the greatest joy. And two, they are very optimistic. They are the most optimistic people I know. I think they are the most optimistic humans on earth, because it doesn't rain, crops fail, livestock die, so many challenges, but they still wake up and do it all over again. You know, they give you hope that tomorrow will be. That's one of the greatest joys of working with smallholder farmers. They are, you know, they are uncomplicated, and it's so easy to relate with them. You know, share a mango while sitting under a mango tree, talking issues, drink a cup of tea, you know, look at their livestock, just listen to the challenges they face, and of course, breathe the clean air around them when you go visiting them in the farms.
Well said. I mean, I like that. They are positive. They're resilient. That's really interesting what you say about a farmer. Like, we don't hear much said about farmers. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm curious to ask you this. Is there a particular memorable experience you've had in your journey in this field? Maybe you can share with us.
We just happened to be in a village somewhere, and our farmer was very distressed because their dairy cow was down, maybe because of nutritional issues, particularly calcium. And when, sometimes when cows calve down, they drop. And so we just happened to be there doing some work with team members. And so, you know, we walk into this homestead and things are not happy. And the farmer didn't seem to know what to do. And so we asked them to call the vet. And the farmer was saying, you see, I don't even have money. So my colleagues and I put some money together and we said, we'll pay the vet. You don't worry. So we called, the vet was called. And the vet came, diagnosed what the issue was, and gave the cow calcium supplement. And the cow, within, it was like magic, lightning. The cow got up on all its fours. And the farmer's resource was saved. And the joy and the rejoicing, you know, around that. That gives you such joy, that you can make a big difference. Other memorable issues or incidences or stories or successes I could share is bringing farmers and helping them to, you know, have new varieties of crops or new planting material, which instantly doubles or grows their yields by 50%. And you go back after one season and they are very happy to pull out their books and show you how much they have recorded as the increase in yield and how much that has translated into money. And you know, you are making a difference. Those are the things that I remember. And the celebration that follows, people dancing, singing, you know, maybe traditional songs and dancing in the meeting, you know, that makes it all so worthwhile.
I can imagine. I can just imagine. I can see you laughing, dancing, and joining them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you, yeah. And you go home and said, I have made a difference. Albeit small, I have made a difference. And that farmers will take into the future.
No, it's definitely impactful. So Lucy, just looking back, where can you say you had your first leadership position? Looking back.
Right at home. I am a firstborn. And more often than not, firstborns are just thrust into leadership. In fact, as a daughter, you are called deputy mother because you are given responsibilities to look after the home, especially when your parents are traveling, or maybe it's during school holidays that they are at work. You take care of the home, you take care of your younger siblings. So you develop a sense of leadership, responsibility, being a self-starter, being in charge. So that is where my leadership journey started, as deputy mother, aka firstborn daughter.
Then tell us, from there, how have you progressed? That's a personal side. Just continue.
So from there you go to school and you know you so you just tend to take charge, or you're very responsible, and the teacher notices you and you become a class prefect, or you're given a responsibility to lead a certain activity, and you know it goes on to high school. And when you start working, because you're such a self-starter and it's easy for you to take charge, you find yourself being given more and more responsibilities, become a maybe a department leader, you become a small project manager, you become a program manager, then a deputy CEO or director. And then you find yourself where I am as a regional director of a country establishment. So that has been my journey, right from home to where I am now.
How is it being a regional head?
I don't know what to say. What it just feels normal, I guess. It just feels normal. You have a job to do, and therefore you do it. You have a responsibility. You know what you need to do. You know what has to be done, and you just take your stride and do it. Of course, there are many things to juggle: programs, people, finances, different countries. Relationships between this country and head office, between stakeholders around you, donors, government, other NGOs. Yeah, so it's a lot of responsibility, but I take it in stride.
What are some of the leadership traits or abilities have you been applying to help you manage that responsibility?
I decided from the very onset, influenced by the different places I have worked, different leaders that I've been under, that I will carve my own path and develop my own identity as a leader. So one, a self-starter. So I don't need to be told what to do. I just do it. I know, I understand what I'm supposed to do, and I get to do it. And I strive to get things done, and done as quickly as possible so that we can move on. My leadership style is more collaborative than anything else, because a leader, you adopt different leadership styles depending on the context. But I'm collaborative, and I allow people to do their thing. You know what you are supposed to do, what you're supposed to deliver. It's clear. You do it. When you have a problem, come back. Let us look at it. I try to remain as approachable as possible. So I'm easy in nature. Easy. If you find me with my colleagues having maybe lunch, you'll probably start wondering who is the leader, because I want to be at their level, want to understand who they are so that they feel free around me. And in that way, when there's an issue, no matter how grave it is, they have the confidence to come back to seek for help and be assured that they'll not get their head bitten off. So those are the traits that I rely on. I'm an extrovert, I'm extroverted. So it's not easy for me to keep quiet around people. I will laugh, I'll be jovial, I'll be happy. And you know, I rely on that to make people or my team and those that I lead easy, feel at ease around myself.
Yes, I know you, Lucy. You are definitely like that. Fun to be around, likes cracking jokes and really. And you know what I've discovered, Lucy, is this: the best leaders, or the leaders who are successful, are the leaders who lead from who they are. Not trying to be somebody else, but just leading from who you are. They have a
Absolutely.
better success rate. So that's
Yes.
challenges in this leadership journey of yours. What have they been?
I've worked for different organizations. Of course, I will not mention them, but different leadership styles. Some are not very easy. I've been through everything: micromanagement, lack of direction, authoritative leaders, toxic work environments. I've lost jobs. I've left jobs. I've been retrenched. Yeah, so
That's a
it's not.
cocktail, almost
It's a cocktail. It's
almost anything
quite.
and everything.
Projects have ended. We have been shown the door. We, you know, yeah. So that's That's it. We've gone through quiet firing, you know, things like quiet firing. So it's been quite a cocktail. So it's not it's smooth. So anybody who is starting their career and who looks or probably looks at who I am now and thinks it's been smooth sailing, it's not. It's been that University of Hard Knocks, the School of Hard Knocks, the University of Life. But that really does sharpen and refine one. As you take on more responsibility, then you're more mature, you're more focused. Yeah, so then it does help for you to become a better leader, if I may say so.
If you're to reflect on those challenges, which are some that have been defining to your leadership style?
One, I promised myself that I will not micromanage anyone. Micromanagement is not one of the things that I do. Number two, I will be very empathetic with the people I lead. Mistakes happen. Sometimes even people do not perform. You have to understand exactly what they are going through. You have to understand who they are from beginning to end. When somebody walks into the office or to work, you must remember that this person is maybe a wife, a husband, they are a mother, they are a daughter, probably they are a student. They may be having even emotional and mental issues. So you have to take that, all that package, understand it and empathize. But at the end of the day, as a leader, sometimes even amidst all that, tough decisions have to be made. But it has to be in an empathetic and understanding manner. I have adopted authenticity and transparency and being truthful. I know I have worked in places where maybe you're offered a certain salary, you negotiate for a certain salary. But when you go in, you realize, oh, the budget was much higher. You see, the power is in the employer's hands because they are the ones who know, but you don't know. And I told myself, I will not do that to people. Let's just be honest, get what you deserve so that it's transparent and it gives people motivation actually to do the best that they can deliver. And as far as I can control those issues, I will remain open, transparent, and authentic. So those challenges that I've gone through as I've grown in my leadership journey, there are some I say I will pick and others I will drop. An organization, I've worked for organizations that really, truly do care about people. And I pick that. And those that do not seem to care about people, I drop that. So I just pick the good and run with it.
Yeah. You know, the thing with experience, it teaches you. As you say, those hard knocks. Some of them are so hard.
University of life. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I'm telling you, there's no free lunch, man. They come at you at times.
Yes.
It's crazy. Yes. But learning, I think it's really learning and getting better.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
I like
that.
Having being micromanaged, then you swear to yourself, this is not something I'm going to do because you know what it does.
Yes, yeah. how it sucks the life out of you, it sucks the confidence, it sucks the ability even to do simple things, you're indecisive, you become anxious, and even when you are talented, the talent doesn't even come through. You question yourself, you start having, you know, imposter syndrome, should I be here? It's I know what it does to people, so... what it did to me at least. So, and I don't want that to happen to anyone else.
What are your leadership joys and memorable moments as a leader? What are those?
Growth. When people grow. When people grow, when business grows, when program grows. That's my joys, my greatest joy. I worked with somebody who was a very brilliant accountant. Brilliant. I think he's the best mathematician I know. And he didn't have a college degree. So I kept asking him, you're so brilliant, what happened? And I think you should go back to school and you can make it. That person is pursuing, I think, PhD today.
Wow.
Yes. And I remember another lady we worked with, she just came in as a cleaning lady. And I told her, you know, the organization does offer, you know, educational support. So take advantage. So they just started with international computer driving license, and they went on to do a certificate in business development, business management certificate, then went on to do a diploma. And eventually they also, you know, earned a degree in Bachelor of Commerce. So those are the things that make me happy. When you get in an intern who more often than not remind me of my young adult children, they don't know anything. They don't have confidence. They don't even know how to conduct themselves at a workplace. And within a year or two, they are taken on full time, or they're able to find a work in other places. And they grow with the organization and become leaders themselves, people you can give responsibility to. Or when you're working in an organization which doesn't have much, and you're able to fundraise and develop programs. That now, as a leader, gives me so much satisfaction, growth.
Growth, definitely, of people, of the organization.
Organization, yes.
Yeah. What keeps you awake in the night?
My people resigning. Oh. My team leaving, because you're thrown back to the, you have invested so much in people, the recruitment process, the onboarding, the training, so that they're able to do the job, and then, you know, they decide to leave, maybe for better things. And it's, yeah, that does keep me awake at night. What keeps me awake at night is finding fraud in the organization. You know, that keeps me awake at night. There's such things going wrong, or losing a donor. And climate change does keep me awake at night.
You can talk about that.
Because I know how much it impacts the farmers. Mm. Yes, and the kind of leadership we see in our nation does keep me awake, because I see how much it impacts our farmers who are working so hard in difficult circumstances, trying to improve themselves, trying to feed themselves, trying to contribute to building this nation.
I agree. This is worrying. You know, over the last couple of years, I've been just keen and just listening, especially, I think, the keenness to agriculture, and more so within Africa, was when this African Development Bank president, you know, he's a former minister of agriculture in Nigeria, and listening him articulate the potential that Africa has, and, you know, challenging us in Africa to be the food basket of the world. You know, the way China is the industrial hub of the world in the manufacturing. And just telling us the potential that in Africa we can be the food basket, our climate, we have great weather, we have got
the land,
good soil, the land
and the soil, the and soil, the young people, energetic, young people, yet we are not, you know, exploiting those. We have become the source of raw materials, so that they are processed elsewhere. And they benefit other economies, and we get the shortest end of the stick. And raw material, I include even the human resources, because now we are exporting labor, our young people. It's a tough situation, but I remain optimistic, like the farmers, that one day we shall overcome.
What are the things that we need to overcome?
I think the biggest issue is governance. The first unit, Development Studies 101, the first unit we studied was governance, because development, the foundation of development is governance, is good governance. As citizens, as professionals, we need to make the right choices about those who we put in leadership, so that when they go there, they are people who love our country, who have a good vision, who are people of integrity. It's only then that, you know, they will do the right thing. And then we are also able to hold them to account, that if they don't deliver next time, you know, we send them home, as it were. That's it. But
yes,
but it's
so
not
it's
as
continuing.
Easy. It may be not as easy, in as far as we can control the leadership. Let's do so, because we are part of a global economy and there are many factors that influence even our governance. But there are things that we can control. We can be people of integrity. It doesn't, and honesty and doing the right thing. It doesn't need to be to come from elsewhere. We can do that. And I'm sure we can achieve the things or the dreams we have for our countries and our continent.
Just paint us a picture of that dream.
We have enough to eat. We have money in our pockets. And we are free of disease. And we are a happy people. I think that is what we want. Children can go to school and they can achieve their dreams and they can find whatever it is, or rather they have the opportunity to achieve their own dreams. They can work, earn a living, raise a family. I think those are the dreams that we have for as individuals, families, nations, and as a continent. We can overcome poverty, and the picture on the or the perception that this continent has.
And in terms of, you know, your field of speciality in the agriculture sector, just trying to see our potential and what we can gain out of that. And you having been in the space for quite some time, what can you say we need to, even in a small way? I liked what you said, you know, just being honest, governance, that's the first basic foundation.
Mm-hmm.
But moving forward and where we are at now, definitely there are steps that we are moving forward towards, even as you can explain to us. And I guess that's what's keeping you doing what you're doing. What other things can you say we need to keep focusing on? And it's little by little, because it seems so, so huge to us.
There are many steps that are being taken. One, providing farmers the resources they need to be better farmers. The idea of providing affordable inputs through subsidized or other mechanism, fertilizer, supporting farmers to find the right information so that they can grow good crops, structuring markets. I wish that we had more cooperatives besides the dairy, the tea and coffee, so that farmers can aggregate their produce and take it to market and gain full control so that they can extract as much value from the end market. I love what is happening in the dairy industry. We, for the longest time, we had one national cooperative, the KCC, but it went through. But I'm seeing more and more farmers strengthening their cooperatives and then collecting their milk and then processing the milk. And I find the milk in the supermarket. There are one or two cooperatives, I understand, they even give a bonus at the end of the year. And their local communities have become vibrant because of things like, you know, dairy and collecting, you know, that collective action. So I wish there was more collective action by farmers, of course, supported by all of us, including the government, so that they take charge of their business. The examples I like to give is Githunguri Dairy. They own the brand Fresher. And for many years, that cooperative was just like any other, not doing very well. But the farmers and their local leaders decided to take charge and revive the cooperative society. Then they invested in the milk plant. And today, they have the third largest market share for processed milk. And if you go to Githunguri town, today it's very vibrant. I think compared to, it's a very, very vibrant township. I think most of the major banks are there. And why? Just because of that collective action. Look at the tea industry. KTDA is the world's single largest exporter of black tea. Why? Because of that collective action. Our coffee is still surviving because of the collective action. So if we had more collective action in maize, in cereals, in avocados, in pixie oranges, in cashew nuts, in coconuts, because when farmers are collected, are acting together, they have bargaining power. They are able even to access services. which they can provide themselves. When coffee was coffee and Muranga Coffee Union was Muranga Coffee Union, the historians tell me that they used to import fertilizer, branded Muranga Coffee Farmers Union, and supply it to the farmers. So those are the things we need to do. And of course, as the public goods need to be present, we need to have roads. In this era of climate change, we need to invest in water harvesting so that we can irrigate and move away from rain-fed agriculture. We need to regulate things better. We need to hold people to account when things go wrong. Don't steal farmers' money in a cooperative society and then you get away with it. It's absolutely wrong. But I think we know what to do. It all lies, the foundation of it is good governance and doing what we are supposed to do. We have the laws, we have institutions, we have hardworking, committed people in Kenya, and especially the farmers. We just need to show them the way.
Talking about farmers, you know, when you go to social media, you come across, you know, agribusiness, people using technology in getting data. How has been your experience in seeing an upsurge of youth? Because I get this impression that youth are getting into agriculture. What is on the ground? What has been your experience?
Some youth want to get into, are in agriculture and playing many roles. There are those who are farming, and they only get involved in certain value chains, which are high value, and they can do on small pieces of land. Because when you are young, you also don't have access to land until you are allocated a piece of land by your parents, and particularly around the time you're getting married. Youth are also service providers. They offer services. They have small equipment. They offer services. There's spraying services. They own a thresher or something like that. They are service providers. They are in technology as well. All these apps and digital agri-tech technologies we are seeing are powered by youth. Youth are also in communication and content creation. You're seeing them on TikTok and all these social media, Facebook, etc. So they are playing different roles. But what I can say in a nutshell is agriculture has not been exactly attractive to young people. One, because they have seen how their farmer parents have struggled to make a living out of agriculture and generate enough money even to take them through school. And then their parents are also telling them, I cannot understand why you would want to be a farmer. Read, study hard, get your qualifications and get out of here. Go to the city, go and find another career, but not farming. And unfortunately, sometimes things don't also align because there are many challenges in agriculture. It is difficult sometimes, most of the time, to make decent money. So if that is not aligning, if you cannot show the young people the money that is coming out of agriculture, it becomes less and less attractive. But there are those who have made conscious decisions to become farmers, commercial farmers. And there are shining lights here and there that can showcase that youth can be farmers or be involved in other aspects of agriculture, processing, market linkage, and so on.
Wow, okay, it's good to know that. It's good to know. I mean, the youth will say, show me the money, and I'll follow it.
Show me the money. Show me the money. Money makes a world go round.
I am telling you, that was
definitely. Yeah, if there is money, young people will go into it.
Okay, back to leadership. If you are to use a symbol, a metaphor, an image of your leadership style and approach, what would that be?
The matriarch elephants. Very strong. It's female. Elephants are huge. But when you watch them in the herd, they are very gentle as well. The way the matriarch leads, very gentle. And when there's a threat, and especially when they have the young, the way they protect their young ones. So it's about leading. It's big. It looks big, but it's gentle leadership, and it still gets us where we are going. It's also nurturing and protective. and the long memory of elephants that they do not forget. Where they used to pass, where they are going, their routes, where to find water, where to find food. That is my metaphor.
Wow, that's a good one.
Or my symbol, rather.
Your symbol, yeah. So true what you're saying. Think of that matriarch. Big yet very gentle. So true what you're saying. Wow. So Lucy, we are about to just come to the end of this interview. And thank you so much for articulating and answering the question so wonderfully and letting us know your heart and your mind about leadership. So if you are two questions, one is in terms of legacy, how are you creating it for yourself?
Whatever I touch, I make a difference. It grows. It grows. Even if I'm not there, someone will say she came in here and we felt her and felt her positively, that we were able to grow. And a legacy of honesty and integrity, that I should not be associated with doing things that are unethical, that my name is not mentioned alongside people who mess around and misappropriate resources for which they have given responsibility over. And that my name will not be mentioned alongside people you cannot work with. That should I want to be employing someone and they go calling around also looking for reference, they say, if Lucy's the leader of that organization, don't go and work there. No. I want people to say, who is leading Lucy? I encourage you 100% to go and work there because you will have a good time and you will grow. That's the legacy I want to leave.
Your final thoughts before we say goodbye?
I just want to dispel myths about leadership. People believe leadership that you know everything and that you have always to be strong. No, you don't know everything. That's why you get people who know as well to help you. That you always have to be strong. Sometimes it is good to show you're vulnerable so that people know you're human, and that you have to breathe down people's necks and you have to be excessively mkali, as we say in Kiswahili. You don't have to. You can be gentle, empathetic, and you can still get things done. It's called silent power or quiet power or something like that. You can exercise that. And that when you walk in the room, people must sit up. You bring the winter. You should bring sunshine in the room. And you know that leadership is that place of privilege where you grab everything. Absolutely not. What my many years of working in different organizations and different roles has taught me absolutely that being a leader, you're there to support the others so that they find a conducive environment to work. That is my parting shot.
Thank you so much, Lucy. It has been great catching up with you and hearing your story and you sharing your insights and wisdom on leadership. Thank you very much. I wish you success, and definitely you're still young, looking where you will be as time goes by. So thanks for that and all the best.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Much appreciated.
Thank you for joining us in today's podcast. We hope you're leaving with insights that will help you live and lead better. We appreciate our sponsors, B&G Consultants Limited and B&G Center for Leadership Coaching, for keeping us on air. Bye for now. See you in our next episode.